Some describe him as amazing, and some hear of him as amazing, while others, even after hearing about him, cannot understand him at all. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Since Gita Upanishad is largely based on the principles of the Upanishads, it is not surprising to also find this passage in the Katha Upanishad 1.2.7. Shravanayapi bahuviraya na labhya shrimbantopi bahavo yamna vidyuhu ascharyo vakta kushalosya labdha ascharyosya kyata shukushalanushishtaha. The fact that the atomic soul is within the body of a gigantic animal, in the body of a gigantic banyan tree, and also in the microbic germs, millions and billions of which occupy only an inch of space, is certainly very amazing. All right, let's think about that for a minute. Is it not amazing that a huge banyan tree is controlled by one little tiny soul? Or a huge elephant, big elephant weighing, how much do elephants weigh? You know, there's a story about weighing an elephant. You know how you weigh an elephant? Well, there was a king, and he wanted to get an elephant weighed. So, well, actually, there's a preliminary to that story. What happened was, some of his ministers came to him, the king, and they complained. They said, the prime minister gets paid so much more than we do, and he gets so much respect, and we don't get so much pay and so much respect, and we don't know why. We think there's so many of us, and we have more. We think we're also very intelligent. So he said, all right, I'll show you why I pay him more. He said, here. And he called one of his servants. Come here. Servant. And he came and he said, go bring the biggest elephant in my kingdom. So the servant went out and brought back this huge, gigantic elephant. And he said, all right, ministers, tell me how much this elephant weighs. So these ministers, they went out in all directions, and they engaged so many people, and they came back, and they were all somewhat exhausted, and they said, Your Majesty, we've looked at every corner of your kingdom, this way and that way. We could not find any elephant scales. So then the king said, all right, very well. He turned to the prime minister and said, now, find out, I want you to weigh this elephant. Tell me how much he weighs. And the prime minister took the servant and led him down to the river. He put the elephant in a big boat. He marked the spot where the water went on the boat. Then he took the elephant out of the boat and filled up the boat with weights of known value until it equaled the same line on the boat. And he came back and he told the king that the elephant weighs so many thousands of pounds exactly. And the king turned to the other ministers and said, now do you understand why he gets paid more? Anyway, there's one little soul inside the elephant, and he's directing that elephant. And when that little soul leaves the elephant, you know what happens to the big elephant? It's finished. One little soul that none of us can even see. Ashcharyavat. Is that not amazing? And the same soul is is inside a little microbe, millions of which take up the space of 1 inch. We can't even see the microbes, yet there's a soul inside there. Some look on the soul is amazing. Yes, because you can't even see the soul. So it's certainly amazing when you can't see it. And yet, you can't see it, but it's so powerful that it can control this huge thousands of pounds of elephant. Or how much does a banyan tree weigh? Millions of pounds. Have you ever seen a big banyan tree? Sometimes they go for a mile. One tree. How much does that weigh? With all those trunks, all the roots. One little soul controlling huge banyan tree. And then the same little soul inside the little germ. It's an amazing thing. And it's fully conscious. When that soul is present, then so many wonderful, amazing things begin to happen. Matter begins to apparently grow. It's not that matter is actually growing, it's changing. We call it growing, but it's because of the presence of the soul. And as soon as that soul is taken away, then all the beauty, all the intelligence, it's like you have Mr. Einstein, such a great brain. But as soon as the soul left his body, his brain was of no value. Except maybe they made some kind of a model of it or something, so that they could appreciate the brain of such a great scientist. But it couldn't work anymore. Didn't work. Otherwise, why wouldn't we just, plug all of our computer wires into Mr. Einstein's brain if it was still working? We could get so much more knowledge out. He could give us some more wonderful, scientific conclusions. But his brain is not working. Why? Because the soul is gone from his body. That soul is so amazing that it activates matter. It makes matter do amazing things. Just like our body right now. Isn't it true our body can do amazing things? Our body can run, it can swim. It can digest foodstuffs. It can see. Isn't that amazing? That matter can see and smell and hear and think and reproduce. It's matter. The body's just made of matter. It can do all these things. Why? Because there's this incredible Acharyavat soul inside there. It's doing all, actually it's the soul that's doing all these things. But matter is activated when the soul is present. Because matter is aparaprakriti, inferior energy, and the soul is paraprakriti, or superior energy. Therefore, the soul can manipulate matter. This is why in the material world everyone is trying to manipulate matter, because we can manipulate matter. But there's one problem. One problem with our manipulating matter. We can manipulate it. We can take a piece of wood and cut it to size and paint it and sand it, and we can manipulate it. We can move our bodies around. Right, Dr. Tom? We can do that. But what we don't realize is although we have some degree of independence in manipulating matter, not a whole lot, but a little bit. There's someone above us who's manipulating us. In the material world, that someone is called Maya, the material energy. Personification of material energy. She's manipulating us. And she's got her machine, of which we are simply placed on that machine, and we're being put through all different kinds of things. You know, going through the what do you call it? You know, the assembly line, and so many different things happen to us. We're just like on an assembly line, and we have our karma is waiting for us, our destiny. You know, on the conveyor belt, and you just go down. And as you go through, and all of a sudden, some machine comes down and cuts a hole in you, and then next thing, makes you all twisted up like this, keeps going, and then all of a sudden, and then it's painted, and the next thing, some plastic is added. This is the assembly line of the material world. And that's what's happening to us. We're simply going through our karma, suddenly, you know, we come out of the womb. We're a little baby crying. Next thing, you know, now we're a little child. And then adolescence, and then this. And then, finally, death. Then we're put on another assembly belt. This time, we come out, instead of crying like a baby, we come out like a dog. This is the assembly line of material nature. And we're thinking we're free. Yes, we're free. We can move this way on the conveyor belt or this way. What is that freedom? You're on the conveyor belt. There's no freedom. Very little freedom. Freedom means to get off the conveyor belt. So that freedom to get off the conveyor belt begins Matato, Brahmajigyasa, when one inquires about the soul, the spirit. That is the beginning of getting freedom. Mukti. Mukti Pade Siddhayabha. Mukunda, the giver of liberation, is Krishna. If you want to get free from this conveyor belt life, of simply being transferred from one conveyor belt to the next conveyor belt, you know, it's like you go down and you get a machine, and then suddenly you're cast off, get another machine. This is troublesome. The way to get free is to take shelter of the controller, of the controller of the machine. Daivihyesha gunamayi mamamaya duratyaya. Mameva ye papyante mayametam taramtite. Krishna says, it's very difficult to overcome this material nature. Because nature is working under me, however, if one surrenders to me, mameva ye papadyante. Papadyante means to surrender. If one surrenders unto me, mayametam tarantite, then I will take you across this ocean of material miseries. So that's all that's required. Is that we have to surrender, and surrender to Krishna? What does it mean? How do we surrender our ears to Krishna, for example, our hearing? By hearing about Krishna. Here it says, Ascharyavat Chainam Anya Shunoti. So we have to hear about him. And some, Pasyati, when they look at him, they cannot understand him. Ascharyavat Chainam Anya Shunoti, Ascharyavat Badadi. Even trying to describe him, he's beyond our description. Words cannot properly capture the glorification of the Lord. Therefore, sometimes people say, you can't speak his name. There's some people, they won't say the name of God. They put some letters and they leave out a few letters because they think his name is so holy that we cannot speak it because we're so contaminated. But actually, his holy name is so pure that even though It is beyond our conception. Still, we're so fortunate that we can speak His name. Or at least we can try our best to chant His holy name. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And by that attempt, Krishna is pleased. Even though we may not be chanting perfectly or purely, even the pronunciation may not be completely perfect, so Krishna is so kind that He sees the sincere attempt of His devotee. It's like the children or the parents. Why do parents take pleasure when their baby goes, "Dad, Dad"? Why do they like that? Not very good pronunciation. Our devotees, they take pleasure when their baby goes, "Krishna, Krishna." They say, "Ah, see, he said Krishna." Even though it might not be perfect. Because there's love there. The parent loves the child. And when the parent sees that the child is trying, then the parent is pleased. Krishna says, as they surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. When he sees someone's trying to love him, trying to chant his holy name, trying to perform some service, even if there's some faults, there will be faults. There will be faults in our service, in our offering. And Krishna overlooks the faults. Well, let's continue with the purport. Men of the forefront of knowledge and men who are not austere cannot understand the wonders of the individual atomic spark of spirit, even though it is explained by the greatest authority of knowledge, who imparted lessons even to Brahma, the first living being in the universe. Who? What a statement. That means, even though they read Bhagavad Gita, which was spoken by Krishna, who instructed Brahma, they won't be able to understand if they're not what? Two things. What did he say? One is austere and the other is? So those who are not educated properly and those who are not austere will not be able to understand the Bhagavad Gita. Okay, so how do we get a proper fund of knowledge? That means in order to get the proper fund of knowledge, one has to approach a bona fide spiritual master. Tandidhi pranipatena pariprashnena sevaya. Upadekshantite jnanam, jnani nastatpadarshana. If one wants to understand this knowledge, transcendental knowledge, then he must approach someone who's in transcendental knowledge and hear from him. He cannot go to the Vedas directly. If someone goes to the bookstore and tries to buy the Vedas directly without the help of the spiritual master, he will not make advancement. He won't understand. But if one is submissive, Brahmachari Gurukule Vasandanto Guruhitam Dasavan Nichaya Dasavan Achavan Nicha Suridra Sorida Guru. Guru Sobhita, something like that. That one should go to the Gurukula, to the place of the spiritual master, and should hear from him and serve in a very submissive mood. Just like a menial servant. Dasavam, Achavam. Should behave just like a menial servant. Nicha. Nicha means not puffed up. Not that I'm coming from a very, do you know who I am? I'm coming from a big family. Do you know what my father's name is? Not like that. In Vedic culture, even the kings would send their son to the Brahmins, and the Brahmins would treat them just like humble servants. Here, such and such, go get this. Even Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he went to the Gurukula, and the wife of the Guru, when he was a young boy, the wife of the Guru said, oh, Krishna, you and Sudama, go out and bring some dry wood for firewood. And they went into the forest. And there was a big storm. And they were out there the whole night. They couldn't find their way back. And the next morning, the Guru went out with his students to find them. And they found them. But even Krishna had to go out, and just like a menial servant, go get some wood, go get some firewood. Just see how important it is, this brahmachari life, this brahmachari training. People who think they don't need brahmachari training are not very intelligent. We need this. If we want to win the pleasure of the spiritual master, if we want the spiritual master to bestow the unlimited knowledge of the Absolute upon us, then we have to approach very humbly. Just like Sanatana Goswami, how did he approach? With straw between his teeth, falling down, dandavat, offering obeisances. This is the requirement. Otherwise, don't expect to get transcendental knowledge. Not by the strength of your intellect. You come in and say, look, I'm in the Mensa Society, and I've got 365, what do they call it? IQ. Doesn't mean a thing. It doesn't register. You have to approach humbly and be willing to follow the instructions of the spiritual master. If the spiritual master tells you, chant 16 rounds a day, then if you're very intelligent, you figure, why should I chant 16? I'll just chant one. I also read in the scriptures, it says, if you chant one time purely, it says that. It says, if anyone chants the holy name of the Lord, even once, he's freed from more sins than he can ever commit. Right? So the over-intelligent person will think, why should I chant 16 rounds? Why waste so much time? I'll just chant one time. I'll be free from more sins than I can ever commit. Does it work? No, he's over-intelligent. Over-intelligent is a sarcastic remark, meaning he's not actually intelligent, but he thinks he's intelligent. He thinks he's more intelligent than his guru. So anyone who thinks he's more intelligent than his guru is in big trouble. He's disqualified from making any spiritual advancement. So if we want to understand the soul and the super soul and the relationship, then the only process is by humbly submitting ourselves to the lotus feet of the spiritual master and engaging in devotional service under his direction. Thank you very much. Are there any questions? Yes, because if one is not engaged in devotional service, most likely he'll be engaged in sense gratification. Although there are some, like the yogis and the mayavadis, they may also be austere. But then they have a poor fund of knowledge. They may be austere, that's a good qualification. But if they are not hearing from the bona fide spiritual master, you can't have knowledge without hearing from the bona fide guru. That's right. That's why the yogis, the impersonalist yogis and the impersonalist speculators and meditators and scholars, they're also not able to understand Bhagavad Gita. They're disqualified. Austerity alone is not sufficient. Because if one is simply austere, only eating, you know, a little bit, but he may be austere for the wrong reason. It's like in Ireland some years ago, one man, he fasted till death as a protest. He was an IRA, he protested against something. But what is the value of his austerity? Didn't get him any transcendental knowledge. He still thought he was the body. He was still thinking, I'm Irish, I'm IRA, and all this stuff. Just like someone thinks, I'm dog, I'm bulldog, I'm terrier. Same thing. The same bodily consciousness. He didn't have any transcendental. He fasted till death. I don't know how long it was. It took him a long time. So simply fasting or piercing the body. When I was in Africa, you know, piercing the body with all kinds of spears and spikes, and they did all kinds of walking on hot coals. They did all these things. But that doesn't help you make spiritual advancement. It's austere. It's painful. But simply pain and austerity is not the requirement. Tadvidhi pranipatena pariprashnena sevaya. One has to be submissive and ready to render service. These are the requirements. Again. Not what? Means to understand. Okay. No, there is no knowledge in the material world. It's all ignorance. Real knowledge means to understand matter and spirit and who's the controller of both. And anything less than that is so-called knowledge. It's not real knowledge. We may pass for knowledge amongst those who are not actually learned. Just like, let's say, someone. But there is no knowledge in the material world. It's all ignorance. It's all darkness. They don't even know who they are. It's like if you start off a mathematical calculation, 2 plus 2 equals 5, plus 5c to the fourth power divided by, you know, square root of... Everything you do will be wrong, because 2 plus 2, it doesn't equal 5. So from the very beginning, everyone in the material world is thinking that he's the body. That's called false ego, ahankara. So from the very beginning, he's off on the wrong track, the wrong foot. There's no knowledge after that. The beginning of knowledge means to understand, who am I? If someone doesn't know who he is, what is the question of knowledge? He's missed the whole point. And if he doesn't know why he's here, for example, let's say we find a house and the house is burning. It's on fire. And there's some people inside. And one of the people inside is studying a book. He's really intent. He's doing a mathematical calculation. He's really working hard. He's studying. He's writing it. And the big loudspeaker from the fire department says, "Everyone inside, please come out. The house is on fire." And the man inside is saying, "Stop this noise. I'm doing my work." And he's doing his calculations. Now, he may even have gotten an A on the examination that he was working on. He may have been first in his class. But would you say he's very intelligent? Or does he have much knowledge? Because he didn't know how to save himself. There's a story. Some of you have heard this story. There was once a scholar, and he went to India for, you know, sabbatical or whatever. And he needed to cross the river, so he got on one of these little boats. They have any, those of you who have been to India, you know about the little boats they have there, and they have boatmen. So he got on this little boat, and there was a boatman, and the boatman, you know, he pushes across. So they got out, and as they were going across, the British scholar, Professor Swadhanath, was his name. So he wanted to strike up a conversation, so he said, "Oh, Mr. Boatman, did you happen to notice the clouds up there? Huh? Tell me what you know about meteorology." And the boatman said, "Well, don't know too much." And when the boatman, or the scholar, said, "Oh, those are cumulonimbus. You don't know anything about the clouds. You don't know anything about meteorology. You've wasted 25% of your life, you fool." Boatman just kept rowing. After some time, he said, "Ah, look there. Did you see that fish there?" And the boatman said, "Yes, I saw." He said, "Tell me what you know about ichthyology." And he said, I don't know anything about it. Don't know much about it. "You've wasted 50% of your life." Then he asked about, I said, "Ah, look, what do you know about geology?" Bowman said again, he didn't know much about it. He just rowed the boat, you know, and he chanted the names of the Lord, and, you know, he was happy, and he wasn't very well educated in that regard. And so Bowman criticized him, "You've wasted 75% of your life." So then that cumulonimbus started pouring down quite a bit of rain. And the boatman said, "You know, it looks like there's going to be a storm." And and then the winds came and the rain came. And the boatman said, "It looks like we're going to have to swim for the shore, Professor. Better jump off and start swimming." And so the boatman jumped off and started swimming to the shore. And the professor said, Wait a minute, I don't know how to swim." And the boatman said, "Well, I guess you've wasted 100% of your life." So the question is, what is real knowledge? Knowledge means to know how to save ourselves. Otherwise, what good is it? If that knowledge simply drags us down and drowns us in this material world of suffering, if that knowledge, so-called knowledge, leads us, if that so-called knowledge simply leads us to our next life of not of a cat or a dog, is that really knowledge? That's a good question, though. Very nice question. Any other questions? Knowledge. And they're asked too. Yes, that is the initial stage of self-realization. So the impersonalists, Mayavadis, or Jnanis, they can understand some aspects of the soul, that's a fact. But not actually. You know why? Because they think the soul is God. They think the individual soul is God. Or they think there's only one soul. So they don't actually understand that there's individual souls and that there's one supreme soul and that the soul is, they're all different individual persons. So actually, although they have some inkling, it's not correct at all. It's full of faults. Hmm? But they also don't have proper understanding of the soul. Because if they understood the nature of the soul, then why wouldn't they become devotees of Krishna? They would know that I'm part and parcel of the Supreme Soul, and my duty is to serve Him. So they don't actually understand. They have some. Sometimes, you know, there's a saying that a little knowledge is worse than no knowledge. Especially like, for example, let's say you have a terrible stomach ache, and if you ask someone, you're in the subway, and you ask someone, does anyone here know anything about stomach problems? And most of the people, they say, no, I'm sorry, I don't know. And someone says, I know, and I've got a pocket knife. But he doesn't actually know, but he cuts open the person. You know, so a little knowledge is worse than no knowledge in some cases. The Mayavadis, or the impersonalists, they think they're God. What kind of knowledge is that? Not very helpful. Better to be ignorant and just say, yes, well, I'm just, you know, I know that I'm the servant of God. I don't understand so many things. Even these people who are not so philosophical, but they have some belief that, yes, there's God Almighty and I'm just, you know, servant. They're better off. At least they have some faith. They don't criticize God. They say, oh, yes, God Almighty. Humility is important in making spiritual progress. If one thinks he's very learned, what is that verse? Yenye ravindaksha vimuktamanina. Vimuktamanina thinks, it means in the mind, he thinks he's liberated. He thinks he's on the highest platform. He's the topmost. He's proud. That's a symptom sometimes of those in the mode of goodness even. They become a little proud of their learning. Oh, and my austerities, I perform so many. But that can also be a hindrance. Even though he may be better off than others, but he may be proud. So better to be humble. That Krishna is very pleased when he sees someone is humble and ready to hear from the proper source. Any other? So Srila Prabhupada will kindly enlighten us. Owing to a gross material conception of things, most men in this age cannot imagine how such a small particle can become both so great and so small. So men look at the soul proper as wonderful either by constitution or by description. Illusioned by the material energy, people are so engrossed in subject matters for sense gratification that they have very little time to understand the question of self-understanding, even though it is a fact that without this self-understanding, all activities result in ultimate defeat in the struggle for existence. Perhaps they have no idea that one must think of the soul and thus make a solution to the material miseries. Some people who are inclined to hear about the soul may be attending lectures in good association, but sometimes, owing to ignorance, they are misguided by acceptance of the super soul and the atomic soul as one without distinction of magnitude. It is very difficult to find a man who perfectly understands the position of the super soul, the atomic soul, their respective functions and relationships, and all other major and minor details. And it is still more difficult to find a man who has actually derived full benefit from knowledge of the soul and who is able to describe the position of the soul in different aspects. But if somehow or other one is able to understand the subject matter of the soul, then one's life is successful. The easiest process for understanding the subject matter itself, however, is to accept the statements of the Bhagavad Gita spoken by the greatest authority, Lord Krishna, without being deviated by other theories. But it also requires a great deal of penance and sacrifice, either in this life or in the previous ones, before one is able to accept Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Krishna can, however, be known as such by the causeless mercy of the pure devotee and by no other way. So my understanding then would be that this is referring to the karmis, the gyanis, and the yogis. Only the bhaktas can understand properly by dint of devotional service. Okay, on that note, we'll stop. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Bhagavad Gita as it is, ki jai.